tuning in to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
You!
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the after show here on AfterBuzz TV for Prisoner. It's Throwback Thursday, and it took 12 episodes for us to get the four words that could best describe us as a panel. Disharmonious, unmutual, rebellious, and reactionary. I think,
I don't think that's us.
Man, feeling the love. Way to start off on a positive note over there, Debbie Downer.
He's just jealous, that's all.
Yeah. I include myself in it. See, yeah. Right now you're being reactionary.
I'm actually being very calm and just stating a fact that you are being a downer.
No, that's not the case at all.
That's actually a feeling.
That is the voice of Steph Z.
Hey guys, what's up? How you doing?
And we have Meredith Placco.
Hey, I am here doing things.
That's right. And this is the Prisoner After Show here on AfterBuzz TV. If you haven't already subscribed, what are you doing?
Come on! Hit that little button!
That's
it's just
right.
a little button.
It's right there. It could be up, it could be down, it's somewhere
could
in the
be
vicinity.
Over and
it
out.
Should be a big button, then they can't miss it.
Well, then they can't see us. Hello.
Oh, okay.
So, we break down each of the episodes of The Prisoner in a certain order, whatever order it is that we go in.
We try.
It will be spoiler-filled at times, although we try to only do things that we've known in the past. Meredith and I have seen this multiple times. Steph C is new to the franchise, so she offers a fresh perspective.
So fresh and so clean.
And we hope we can change her mind today, because that's the episode
change
we're going to
change my mind.
We're going to be, that's the episode we're talking about today, a change of mind, episode 12.
Yeah. Do you hope to change my mind?
From what? I know.
To,
like,
yeah. How do you want me to think, Phil?
How would I be
harmonious with you?
Just agree.
Would I do your laundry?
That's a start.
Oh, yeah. No. Well, because if it was like the number two in this episode, we'd want you to do the laundry.
Yeah. Do your laundry, make your dinner.
Mm-hmm.
To be fair, I did have to get my own water ahead of time, so that was not really fun.
Well, you know, everyone has to pull their weight in the village.
Yeah, Phil.
I have a lot of weight to pull. Have you seen this gut?
Actually the other day. I saw it in the bear.
All right, before this gets too off track, let's overall reactions to change of mind. Let's start with Steph Z, always fresh to the panel.
Oh yeah. I actually I really enjoy the episodes where at the end of the day he shows his somewhat spy tactics and outsmarts people. So this to me was a check in that box, because some of the episodes don't do that. And when you guys first introduced me to this show, it was this old spy like cool show. So when I get that, which was the thing that attracted me first, of course, you know, besides the fact of being on a panel with you two lovely people, it was that. So when that comes through as a whole, I'm happy. I'm a happy watcher.
Happy watch.
Happy viewer.
Happy viewer.
Whatever.
All right, Meredith.
I really like this episode because of all the topics it brought up. I mean, we're seeing a lot of like psychotropic drug mind alteration. We're seeing criticisms of McCarthyism, the concept of self-criticism, which is very big in communist countries. I want to talk a bit more about that later. But it really, for me, this episode kind of entrenched on a lot of how to control a population through various social and psychotropic methods. And I find that always to be fascinating.
Yeah, you know, what I liked about this episode was that, we've kind of seen various elements of this, but this is the first time, really, that the community at large is getting really involved rather than just, sheep or rat-ish.
Yeah.
You know, they're directly affecting the prisoner in a negative way.
But even then, they're still acting as sheep because they're acting in accord with the village.
This is true, even though he tries to highlight, I am not of the committee, so on and so forth. So, yeah, absolutely. All right, so here's the overview that we all know and love. Mm-hmm. Roger Park is the author, or the screenwriter of this script, and this is the first script he's ever written. He wrote it when he was in his late 20s, so that's commendable. I thought it was a good script.
Mm-hmm. Beginner's luck. No, I'm just kidding.
I mean, he went on to write 20 novels, and
no, I'm told it was a joke. Maybe it was a bad joke, but it was a joke, and I thought it was funny. I think when you have people that right away do something good like this, it shows.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, he took the care, you know, his brother is a psychiatrist, so he took the care to ask him a lot of questions. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's grown up with, obviously, his brother his whole life, but now to really study into that, it really paid off for the research that he did. You know, as you said, the hallucinogenics, the lobotomies and aversion therapies, all that really came to a play, and it played really well. And this was filmed right after It's Your Funeral, which was the last episode that we did. So therein is the continuation. We had a director, Roy Rossetti. He was fired after one day.
Oh.
Wow.
He was rebellious, unmutual.
Yeah, Madeline's a bit of a number two when it comes to this show.
But I kind of love that in the same sense. If you hire somebody and you're not getting what you want, to right away be able to know in your gut to tell you, like, we need to change this, that's commendable in a way. I mean, unless the guy just did something completely ridiculous. Do we know why he was fired?
I did not. Okay. I was not able to
because
find any
McGowan's
further.
Because McGowan's a bit of a control freak, I think.
Right, which,
yeah.
But in that, look at what a great series you made because of that. So I'm okay with that.
You know, the female in today's episode, what's her number again? I just forget.
There's so many numbers. 96? Was it 96?
No. 80 something?
It was
83?
86.
Okay. So with her, you know, she actually was asked, how was it work to, what was it like to work with McGowan at this time period? And she said, you know what? He was nice. Hmm. And she goes on to say that, you know, when she was doing studying her lines and things like that, McGowan said, you know, everybody quiet down so she can study her lines. Now, obviously, if you're a crew member and you want to talk and just have fun,
yeah
that sucks. But guess what? For the betterment of the show, you want your actor to be as prepared as she can be, so shut up.
Mm, right, awesome. And I feel like at the end of the day, too, people might say, oh, he's a jerk, this, that, and the other thing, but he probably kept it, for the most part, on schedule, on time. You know, when people are hard workers in situations where there's a lot of people that kind of want to have fun at work as well, you're always sought out to be the, you know, whipcracker, so to speak.
Yeah.
Well, so, and I think, and she had such a different feel from a lot of other women in the show. I felt there was a lot more weight with her character, and she had to play, you know, a much harsher woman, and I think it worked out.
Right.
Yeah. And by the way, for those of you saying, if you're not aware, McGowan hid his name under the pseudonym Joseph Serf, meaning increaser slave. That's what that means. The two
names. Increaser slave.
Because Joseph comes from the Hebrew word increaser, and Serf is a slave.
Yeah.
So, there you go.
Mm.
Wow.
Meaning behind that one, too.
Very deep, though.
All right. So, let's get into the discussion. Mm-hmm. The inciting incident. What did you guys think of it? Because he's just working out, and there's two dudes come, and it's like, what are you doing?
For me. Go.
I promise it will be my only tangent of the show. Maybe not. Have either one of you ever seen the movie American Anthem?
No.
Oh, my God. It's a great gymnastics movie. And it was almost, I mean, it came after The Prisoner, but it was literally that scene of, like, him in the woods doing this, like, working out by himself. I had no idea two guys were going to come out for him. I thought it was just his daily routine. He's working out. He didn't seem like he was trying to escape. He was just minding his business. And then we got these two guys.
Yeah, who those two guys are being disharmonious.
Yes.
To this poor man just working out in the forest. So.
Absolutely. And that's the whole thing. It's like, okay, you were disharmonious to him.
Yeah.
Not the other way around at all.
Well, but if you think about it, ooh, you're going to like this one. If you think about it, that's pretty much a amazing example of religion. Because a lot of people think they're supposed to, like, if I have certain beliefs and you don't believe what I believe, then I'm going to be disharmonious to you. But I'm being disharmonious to you because I think you're being disharmonious to something else. So it's kind of like you're doing the same thing.
Yeah, but it isn't up until you take an action against that.
But most people do by excluding, by a lot. There's
I don't care if I'm excluded because that's my choice, right? But if you literally come into my circle and say, you're stupid, you're wrong, this and
which
that.
Which a lot of people do because of religion.
But
they
look,
do.
Look at this on a broader sense of taking it from the religion to a political standpoint. We know number six is a dissenter. We know he is, right. He doesn't fall in line. And this is, you know, a tactic like this is something you've seen in societies, specifically communist societies, where you have a political dissenter that is ostracized from the community, is put into a position where they're made to be the criminal or the, not the, what's the opposite word of victim?
Example.
The example.
Right.
It's not the word I was looking for, but that works too. And what these two men are doing, they're coming in to incite an incident that will ultimately end up with number six, where he's going to be to
instigate.
To be judged. Yeah, they're instigating it and to be judged.
By the way, there's a great movie called Mr. Majestic where all this guy wants to do is work on his melon crop. And just so many guys just mess with his.
Oh my God.
And everything that he tries to do, he's like, guys, I just want to pick my melons. Can you please leave me alone? And they just won't leave him alone. That's and he's deemed all these things. So the four things are disharmony. Mm-hmm. By the way, I wanted to kind of, we'll each take one. Steph, so you can take the longest one because I don't feel like reading today.
Oh no.
I wanted to give definition to these things. So disharmonious, lacking in harmony.
You want me to? Unmutual. A word coined on the TV show The Prisoner, main character number six was once declared unmutual and disharmonious for not obeying the rules and for not honoring his obligations as a citizen of the village, his prison. In other words, an unmutual was a bad member of the village society because he was a disruptive influence, refusing to join in or play by the rules. Which I don't know if I believe, because he's done that at some point. Mm-hmm. Also, to be classed as an unmutual meant a citizen would be shunned by other citizens until he conformed or became mutual. If that didn't work, other citizens would eventually take it upon themselves to correct the unmutual's behavior with increasing levels of violence. Can be used as a noun, adjective or insult.
I like how they made up a word for this.
That's great. Yeah.
Well, I feel like it's not necessarily true by definition, though, because at certain times he does participate. Maybe it's, you know, half, but it's not. He's not completely resisting. If this would have been maybe the second or third episode, sure. But now I feel like he does, in some sense, participate. Again, it's not full participation, willing and happy, but he has been. Do you guys not feel that way? You're both looking at me weird.
I think commitment and commitment matters, right? So if he's 90% committed, whatever it is.
I just look at this as its own. I mean, regardless of what he has and hasn't been prior to this point, this is this number two's ploy to,
against him.
Yeah, against
Got
him.
It.
So he's recreating the world they live in, essentially.
Right.
Which is something I've noticed as the show progresses and on this viewing, is that each number two rewrites the rules of the village.
Yeah.
Rebellious, refusing to obey rules or authority or to accept normal standards of behaviors, dress, or politics. Or et cetera. Sorry, I skipped down.
So obviously we would say the prisoner is not rebellious in this opening scene.
No.
He's just doing his own thing.
Yeah.
Although, dress code-wise, everyone's got the stripes all the time. He has kind of very plain shirt.
Yeah. They don't really address that, though.
No.
It's almost like they're keeping it that way so that they know he's somewhat different, and he hasn't maybe conformed, maybe because he's unmutual. He hasn't conformed yet to this exact prisoner-style sweater.
Yeah.
Would you like me to read the last one, or you got it, Phil?
You can read it.
Oh, geez. Reactionary, relating to, marked by, or favoring reaction, especially ultra-conservative in politics. Initial council meeting.
No, that's
the next.
That's the next topic.
Oh, I thought it was a big one again. That's what I was trying to like.
He's definitely reactionary. We see that when he's, you know, when you see the self-criticism happening prior to his the council meeting, you know, and how he reacts to that, and how he always reacts to the council or anyone. He's very contrary.
Yeah. I do have to say did it happen before when he went in and saw the other people?
The council from what, free for all?
No. The council is when he goes in and he sees the one guy in the room with the TV screen and he's deemed unmutual.
But there's the scene before he meets with the council where there's the guy standing and being like, so, you know, he's this citizen stands up and he's reciting things that he's hearing on the loudspeaker.
Right.
And it's, you know what that is. I mean, that's a perfect form of self-criticism, which I've referenced a couple times and I was explained to Phil beforehand. So what that is, it's, you see this a lot. Stalin, Russia, China, Cuba, and especially in the Khmer Rouge, where a member of society, or even in specifically with the Khmer Rouge, they'd have public self-criticisms where people would stand up and denounce the things that they did poorly that day. It could be everything from, like, I forgot to change the water in the prisoner's toilet section, or, you know, I did not think kindly of our dear leader today. And it's a way to control the public to get them to, one, publicly acknowledge what they've done wrong in a way that everyone will kind of admit that, like, we're not perfect, but then to hope in terms that you don't make that mistake again.
Yeah. See, well, it's interesting to me because, I mean, I know that this maybe was not used in a positive way, mm-hmm. but I feel like that is a method that could be positive.
And in terms of neuroscience, it is. It's actually looked at that several, like, the in the neuroscience area, it's actually said that people who are self-critical and engage in daily self-criticisms tend to be better people overall, but there's like a fine line where it becomes controlling versus cathartic.
Yeah, and I think I wrote, you know, what's the difference between a 12-step program versus a totalitarian government? You know,
because I'm not that familiar with a 12-step program.
AA, right?
I know about it, but I don't. I mean, unless you go through it, I feel like it's hard for you to, from the outside, know exactly what that
means. I mean, I haven't been through it, but basically, we've kind of seen it from what we've seen on TV or other stuff, and, you know, I'm making a little bit more light of it than obviously I should be, but it's you say, like, you admit, I am an alcoholic, mm-hmm. then you admit your faults, right? And so by admitting these things, then you can hope to change, but you have to make sure that you can admit certain things and you say certain things as they, obviously, it's not verbatim like it was in this sense, but there are certain things that you have to be willing to admit about yourself.
Well, I feel like, too, I mean, I don't know, for me, you know, and in my history, you know, my personal life, my business, owning a business life, I feel like two of the most powerful things that one can say is, I don't know, and I was wrong. Mm-hmm. And I feel like a lot of people aren't, what we do is we place blame on all the, like, we just throw blame around. And it's really interesting what happens when something goes wrong and you're with a room of people and everyone thinks they're going to blame the other person. If you just claim fault, it's like everyone has their weapons out and they all just drop, you know? Yeah. And so I feel like it's a freeing thing to be able to do that. So, you know, I'm sure there is a fine line, but I do feel like there is a freeing thing of being like, man, I screwed up.
Yeah, I think it's different when a government is controlling and forcing you to do this versus you as an individual.
It's just, it's unfortunate that this isn't used in a way that could be.
But it has to be honest, right? It can't be the negation of negation. Like, because I could totally be like, Steph C, I totally messed up, man. I know I owe you, like, probably, what, $5,000 or something. I messed up. I owe you the money. I don't have it. I'm sorry.
Right.
And it's like, okay, that's a bunch of BS.
Yeah, but
I'm trying to think of other examples. That was the best one I could come up with at the moment.
No, but what I'm saying is there's something more powerful that if you did owe me $5,000 and you were supposed to give it to me today and you didn't, there's something more powerful of being like, I'm sorry, I just didn't.
But again,
it has to be honest.
It has to be.
That's what I'm saying. It has to be honest.
It can't be. It can't be sorrow masked as.
Yeah.
Or,
yeah.
You know,
it can't be feeling. Like, there's so many things that are masked by emotions, and the emotions that people feel insecure, that's why they have to make excuses rather than just admitting they're human like everybody else and being like, I screwed up.
I'll give you the alternate, right? This is the more positive way of looking at it. A lot of people say, I wish. Instead, say, I will. You know what I mean? Because, hey, everyone... like
that's like saying don't say try, because you don't try, you do.
Well, there you go. Fine.
Yeah.
You know what?
And someday is not a day of the week.
You should try.
That didn't make any sense.
I don't know. Why you got to criticize me?
I'm not criticizing you.
I'm trying to power up the people by saying don't wish, try.
Right? Am I doing it? No. Let's have a mediator. I always get blamed. I always get called on mutual.
That's why you're on that side of the table.
I know. I'm always the one in trouble.
Maybe, like, we're the majority. You're the minority. So you're the one being ostracized.
By the way, No, because this relates, right?
Yes.
There's Ketchup on Silicon Valley. There's a great moment in there where one of the guys, he's a 1%er, and he says, you know what? You guys ostracized the 1%. You know who else ostracized Jewish people that were kind of a minority? The Jew. And he goes off on this.
I know that guy. I love that scene so much.
Exactly. And he goes off on this whole tangent about how the 1% could actually be treated more harshly than the Jews during the Holocaust. And I say it with laughter because it's such an amazing scene in terms of how it's written and the logic that it takes. And that's just pure comedy. And you just got to go with it. But that came to mind. So check that out, too.
All right.
All right.
That was episode 2 of this season, by the way.
There you go. Yeah, probably. Yeah. Probably. Also, initially, the council chamber had people talking, but they changed it to a loudspeaker, possibly a computer. They related that more to the general, perhaps, you know, all these computers, advancement of technology. You're not even, when you go to a council chamber, you don't even speak to anybody. So I thought that's where that came from, ultimately.
And that just seemed like so much commentary on what was going on in America at the time with the witch hunt, the communist witch hunt trials and McCarthyism, where you have, I mean, they even said, you know, here's a council of people and they're in the, you know, number 6 is like, what are you going off of? Like, what have you studied of me? And they're like, oh, we're just going off of number 2's files of you. It's sitting there saying that you as a person, we're not going to look at your crimes or your mental instability. We're just going to go off some other random person's accusations of you. And then to switch to that computer, it takes it even one step further from humanity and one step further from the people, where it's a blind accusation at a person in hopes of, you know, labeling them as a dissident. And I just found that
because God forbid they judge you based on you as the character through emotion and observation.
I found it very interesting when they were showing the other people that, you know, you had number 93, who was the one deemed unmutual. And then you had number 42, who was outside waiting for severe depression. Both have numbers that either add or subtract to make number 6.
Ooh.
There you go.
Just saying. 9 minus 3, 4 plus 2.
You know what? If I ever come up with a TV show, I'm just going to label everyone numbers, and Stephanie's just going to go off the wall. And be, what does it mean?
It's got to mean something. You're gonna laugh at me, and I stopped myself when there's a scene when a flock of birds flies over.
Oh, the geese.
Yeah, and I was like, should I count the birds?
Yes, they released a set number of birds.
You never know, man. I didn't count them. But I wanted to.
That's why Rory was fired. Rory had 12 geese. We needed 14.
Yeah. Bird killer.
Oh, my God.
No, we added a geese.
Yeah. Oh, whatever.
He just couldn't get enough of them.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Totally not true, by the way.
No.
All right. So the prisoner number 6 is told that he is he's not quite declared mutual. At this point, we need further investigation. But eventually, the picture that we're seeing, it is of him eventually being, you know, unmutual. Mm-hmm. For right now, it's further investigation than I couldn't find the tally ho at this moment in time, so that's why I pulled up this one.
Right. Did you guys think though the picture that we saw before this, the council meeting? Yeah, the council meeting. It was very much like a poker table.
Yeah.
With a pit boss inside.
That's because it's all a game to them.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I was very much poker table. And it was interesting that he, number 6, when he's in the middle, he stays in the middle until number 2 comes in, so he's kind of has a little bit more power.
Yeah, and they have to, like, remove the little table piece to let him out. I thought that was so... Okay. Sorry.
That was they're wearing their
stupid top hats again, so you know they're important. Do you remember from the previous episode?
Oh, absolutely.
I hate those stupid
And remember when it wasn't the general, but it was the other one? He came in... I think it was the general.
Yeah, I think so.
He came in with the top hat.
That's how you know they're important.
Well, you know.
See, that's all part of the dress code. It's part of being not rebellious, you know? Normal standards of behavior and dress.
Yep.
So, okay. Is social norm what society deems, or what is it, or how do you get what you want? Is one of my questions upon further investigation of whether or not number 6 is unmutual. Maybe it's not greatly written because everyone's quiet. I guess the question is, like, you know, who decides these things? Like, how can you be an individual but still fit into society? Like, this is the first for me, right?
Money.
Money.
Are you talking?
Oh, I'm sorry, I got distracted by Flava.
We're not on Public Enemy number 6 yet, but
I literally wrote. I love you, Phil. I literally wrote song Public Enemy.
Oh my God.
Answer with one.
Okay, so going back to your question.
Yes.
In the case of the village, it is the government, the ergo society, that deems what you should have, like, what's expected of you. There is no, we've already established, there's no individuality in the village. It's an illusion. If you have any of it, it's what they want you to think
about.
Yeah,
in there. I mean, in today, in, like, actual society, I think it's not just the government.
I think it's social media, kind of, in a way.
Well, but social media, I mean, in the realm of the world, social media has only existed strongly in the past 5 years.
True. Well, I was thinking, like, in like today, like if we're like
today, yeah. Yes, but I feel like it's money, because money, if it all actually comes back to money, because if you think about how you fit in, mm-hmm. it's by the things you have, the way you look, which are all money, and it's all fake. But that's, you know, it's funny to me, like when I used to work in the fashion business, it was just so funny to me how these trends and the what's in, how important that is for people to feel part of society, of what's in and what's going on. But you actually, it's just like a bunch of people like me that are designers that are like, hey man, this stuff looks cool, let's sell it.
But yeah. But do you as a designer dictate that that takes off, or is it some member of society, like
it's the designer, because what I make, the stores then buy,
but
then that's the thing you want.
But just because it's in stores doesn't mean it's popular. But say you take but
if
it's
in, no, but I disagree with you 100%, because if it is in the right stores, then it means it's popular.
That's
like the
true.
Fact that I sold Saks, Neiman's, Bloomings, Nordstrom's, like the people with more money, more prestige, go to those stores.
Well, yeah, it's always
then
the,
they buy that thing, then they're photographed in that thing, then the rest of the world wants that thing.
All right, I can acquiesce to that.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of. I think there's. Couple things, right? So it's, you want to have the platform to, you know, influencers.
Yeah.
So it's a combination of those three. And beyond the money point, you choose, you know, there's different verticals of what you choose. It could be, you know, beauty. So looking good. It could be, you know, if your thing is like you value intelligence, whatever you set a value for that you want to achieve, then now you're always forever going to be beholden to that standard of whatever it is you think. And ultimately it's going to be almost unattainable.
Well, see, I would disagree a little bit, because I feel like that 70% of people don't set their own values, like you're saying. Like, people don't pick.
Not consciously, but subconsciously they do.
No, I don't think they set them themselves. I think they're subconsciously they're influenced by exactly what you said, influencers, be it designers, trendsetters, you know, what we see on television, what we see on the internet.
And that all comes back to money, because people that are in some sort or have some sort of platform, they're paid to wear their shirt, they're paid to watch their hat, their headphones, everything that they have that's supposed to be cool. It's maybe not their own choices. It's some sort of sponsorship deal.
Yeah. And that's been since the dawn of media.
Right.
It's been like that. You know, I mean, prior to radio and television and the internet, you know, trends were set by the royalty, you know, the people within the courts.
Right. And even think about, like, movies and stuff like that. A lot of great movies don't get the press that other movies do. There's, like, you know, movies like Fruitvale Station and movies like underground, not on that's so underground, but movies that actually mean something. Shows like how we were just talking about High Profit, shows that are really educational. They don't get as much media push because they're not as entertaining. Therefore, people don't get the knowledge and education to make their own decisions.
And the same thing can be said about politics. The people we vote for are the ones with the most money to spend on advertising.
Yeah. I think money...
There's 50 candidates each election.
Yep.
Ah, oh, man. All right. So there you go. Mm-hmm. Question and answer.
No, can we go to that next picture, please? Because I'm...
All right, fine. We'll talk about... So number six.
Public Enemy public number
Public Enemy
one.
Number six. I brought up... we're looking at a picture of Flava Flav and, of course, Public Enemy, the band. This is one of my favorite bands, actually. That's one of the reasons... other than that, I never really had a real agenda.
I'm impressed.
To insert them in. Maybe it starts conversation, though.
I got to see them not too long ago at the House of Blues. Within the past, like, year and a half, 2 years, they played, like, a Benefit show. Amazing.
That's awesome.
It was amazing. I don't want to rub it in because you weren't there, but it was amazing. And I feel like...
What's your favorite song? What's your favorite song?
911's a joke in your town. Get up, get up, get down. 911's a joke in your town. What's yours?
I like He Got Game or what's the Harder Than You Think.
Yeah.
Harder Than You Think is a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But look at this guy. He's rebellious, according by definition. Yeah. And I think that'd be really fun too. We should like name a couple people and by definition what he's.
Well, do you know why he played? This is kind of off tangent, but we will tie it into all of this because it's just an example of you know sort of rebellious.
That's what I was gonna say, group. Yeah.
Flavor Flav, you know why he has the clock?
I do not.
Come on, Steph Z, you call yourself. The time is now for the black man to rise. That's why he has
the
clock.
Oh, I didn't know that. I heard the time is now, but I never knew it was a like a political type situation.
You know, I mean, here's the thing. You know what Chuck D stands for, correct?
Oh, yeah.
No, definitely not. But
I'm sorry. I'll be honest. So when we're talking about, like, intellectual rap music, I tend to go more KRS-One. And NWA. It's kind of my
fair enough.
Well, they're making a great movie about this.
I'm so excited about that. Yeah. The NWA biopic. I'm so excited.
No, they're making another one too. Called is it same one? It's called Straight Outta Compton.
Yeah, Straight Outta Compton. Yeah, but it's
mostly about that. Yeah, but it will talk about all this.
Yeah,
stuff.
I'm so excited for that.
Yeah. So I this is different. You know, this kind of gives it a race to an argument of who's a public enemy and things like that, and the way society views public enemies, and you know that should be a great movie. And if you really look at kind of public enemy, it is Chuck D in terms of what his message really is. Mm-hmm. Yes, there's some violence to it and an aspect of that, but the core message, like if you read the lyrics, that this is, I mean, some of it's like poetry.
Yeah, no, I mean, and you know, full disclosure, you know, like here I am, a white girl from the Southeast. Talking about, you know, especially specifically West Coast rap music, I can't obviously identify, but what a lot of young black men and women went through and are still going through in the times, you know, you see the violence reflected in the music, but that's a violence that's so inherent in their culture, not between each other, but what they had to face with, you know, outside forces, be it white law enforcement and stuff. So, I mean, people talk a lot about the reaction and like, oh, we shouldn't listen to this music because there's so much violence. It's like, but this is a day-to-day life for them, be it between gang wars or even with, you know, the police. And to tie it back into the prisoner being regarded as a public enemy or any person regarded as a public enemy, it's you put that stigmatism on someone to decrease their value, decrease the value of their words. Right. And I find that actually really
like
great
I feel like, yeah, and I feel like, you know, the music, especially of some of these people, you got Tom Morello from Rage Against the Machine, too, doing, you know, certain things. It's an outlet for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's let's talk about it instead of partake in it. And I know it happens, too, sometimes, but I feel like, you know, there are people that have a really good message. And again, the message is not something that society might want us to read, learn, or be educated by, so therefore certain things like this are looked upon you know, in a different way.
Yeah, and I don't know necessarily that that number six is creative, but he's creative sort of sometimes in the way he goes about doing things, so you could say that. But it's interesting, I wrote down many creative people tend to get diagnosed as crazy or insane, right? So public enemy, they're just whatever, they're hooligans and so on and so forth. And in this particular episode, it, just kind of being deemed insane, the stigma that it holds, and how you're, by society now, again, you're lesser just because you suffer or, you know, you're looked upon as different, which is not fair.
Well, you know, a lot of times through history, people who were, be it politically outspoken or just different, were deemed insane and put into asylums. So, I mean, or, you know, we did start to see behavioral correction in the 30s, 40s through 60s. So, I mean, that's, you know, it's a great commentary on a lot of things that were, you know, very prevalent both in British and Western society as a whole.
Let me ask you this. What does it say about, and one of the things that I see on a daily basis, people just aren't educated in the way, and I don't mean that from a school standpoint, but no one really takes the time to go through and say why something's wrong, why you shouldn't do something, really creating kind of mentorship. And so what does it say about a society when your first means of correcting behaviors is throw someone, whether it be at jail or certainly like to have them lobotomized, right? That you couldn't break through as a society, you know, that you gave up that quickly.
It's fear.
That was fear, yeah. It's exactly what I was going to say. Mm. It's fear. And we see that every day. We see it every day. You turn on the news, any news station, all they're trying to do is instill fear. trying to instill fear because they don't want the people that are quote unquote more creative or out of the box thinkers. They don't want them to have some sort of platform because they're scared that people would buy into it because that's what's really happening.
Yeah. I mean, well, maybe we don't have, you know, it's funny. You see some people label the government as what's trying to here in America is trying to control and oppress people. But I see it more corporate America as the one that is really that we're beholden to.
But the government and corporate America are hand in hand.
Yeah, they are. But I see it's more furthering corporate America than our own government, personally.
Well, yeah. I mean, six corporations on all the news stations.
Yeah.
I mean,
well,
no.
And just like, you know, and how many government officials have ties to their own companies that are making, you know, what was it?
Donations to the campaign.
Well, not just that, but Bush's?
Enron?
Bush's vice president. What was that?
Cheney.
Cheney. And his ties to all the big oil companies.
Enron?
And, yeah, Enron, yeah.
No,
yeah.
It was, it began with an H.
I should know.
Halliburton.
Halliburton,
yeah.
Oh,
yeah, not it.
Yeah. You see, you know, through media and through, you know, just popular culture to an extent, the population of America kind of being controlled.
Right.
You know, and like you said, through fear. And that's the thing is that you have anyone who stands out, we label them crazy. Now, sometimes, you know what? There are people I see talk on the news. And I'm like, no, that person, yeah, that person's crazy. They think Obama was born in Kenya. They also think he's a Muslim. And they also think that we shouldn't allow anyone who's not white in our borders. Okay. I think I might be able to be like, I don't agree with that person. And that might be crazy. But then you see,
right.
Huh?
I said right.
Yeah. But then you see normal, like people who just have ideas of, like we were talking about earlier, opening up medical marijuana for a more evaluation use, and those people are deemed crazy.
Right.
Sorry, yeah. Tangent.
No, all good. All good. You know, one of the things, so kind of tying it in there, number six, what I found interesting about his interaction with number two, about the, you know, the moment where he, mm-hmm. number six, deemed himself public enemy number six, is the fact that number two, again, says, I'm not a part of the committee. You know, and it goes back to Steph's point about, like, corporations and the government are kind of are separating themselves in that way from a public perspective, but not necessarily.
Yeah. Right.
It's always been that way. Yeah. So you can say what you want, but you're involved.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And we see that to be true as the investigation grows further. What do you guys think of the first form of therapy? They're reading poetry, et cetera, et cetera, and then turns into a mob.
I don't think it would turn into a mob if number six wasn't there to incite them.
Right.
Well, yeah, absolutely. But that's the point. You know, he was there and he was being disharmonious.
Right.
So.
I mean, I think the same thing. I think it was an interesting way to show what was going on. But it wasn't, for me, it wasn't, I don't know, I didn't.
Yeah, I actually didn't think much of that scene.
Yeah.
I just thought it was a scene to further getting
it was a transitional scene.
Okay. So how about this? Let's talk about the fact that the council is made up of males, and the appeals court, or whatever we're going to call them, is made up of women.
And number two hates women.
Stupid woman.
Yeah, he was throwing so much shade on the
86.
On 86, and I couldn't
see. Was I the only one that thought for a second, split second, that 86 was on Six's side?
I mean, they all pretend to be initially.
Yeah. No, but for real, like at first, when you know when we see the procedure happening and she kind of turns it off, I'm like, oh, she's not going to do it. And then you see it cuts to a scene of the two of them, and I felt like she was going to tell him, I didn't really do it. Just fake it with me.
Yeah, but then she tries to, like...
Very quickly, I lost that thought. But I had, for a split second, I had that thought.
I think we all do, because we've been conditioned to think that way.
Right.
But I think because when she exclaimed to number two that, I don't think this worked, and he's like, no, look, he's so docile. And she's like, I don't, you know, I'm not too sure here.
Here's the thing. Knowing... Maybe when upon first viewing, I maybe thought that. Knowing what I do know about the show and knowing that, at the very least, the history of the past episodes, it's the fact of I certainly have to be very cautious because apart from the prisoner, no one else, everyone's kind of operated in fear. And so as much as they may want to be rebellious, reactionary, unmutual, and disharmonious, they ultimately choose not to out of fear.
I also found it interesting is once he switched the teas and she was drugged, he finds her about, you know, talking about number two, and she's like, no, I'm higher than number two. Like I thought that was really telling, and I wonder if there was something more to, you know, we always know number twos are replaceable, that, you know, we just assume that number one is the highest level, but I think, you know, there's a whole group of people outside of the village that still exert authority over him.
I have a question.
Yes.
We don't see, is there any other person that we see continuously in each episode? No. Right? It's always different people.
I mean, sometimes we see like two.
We're going to have two be number, the butler.
The butler. I was just going to say, we see the butler, and we've seen the chess player guy referenced.
That was the only one. Yeah, okay.
But the butler. Let me
say, what do you guys think, speaking of the butler, kind of a side tangent from what we're talking about, how is their relationship forming? Because they look into each other's eyes. And we know that McGoohan brought him on last minute because he liked his look and he wanted the character in there. Does it go beyond that? Because there's always like a smirk between the two of them.
Yeah.
Like, I know what you're up to. Hey, buddy. Whatever it is. What's your take on this developing relationship, if there is one?
I think it's just a knowing, an understanding of the two constants that are always there. You know, if the butler is acting in the interest of the village, he's a silent character, not just in terms that he doesn't really speak, but I mean, he's just, you know, he's almost all knowing because he is the only one that we see. So I think it's an interesting relationship of, I think they both know, and I think he knows that the prisoner is never going to break.
Mm-hmm. I never put any thought into it, I'm not going to lie. Okay. He's just kind of there for me.
So to the question of who's higher, is it number two or is it number 86? I think it more so means that sometimes, unfortunately, there's people in a position of power that don't actually know what it is. Like, I don't think this guy even has – it's one thing to not know how to do something, but when you have no idea of the concept of how to enact it, then you're really powerless.
Right.
Huh.
And that's what I think number – you know, because even though he says stupid woman, well, why aren't you there doing it? Well, number one, you can't gain his trust. Number two, you're not skilled enough to do it yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like you did the procedure and whatever else. So
number three, you didn't know it was happening right away. It took him a minute to realize it too.
Yeah.
Like number two, number six is completely, you know, clearly smarter than all of them because he figured it out. He sees it. Like they're supposedly filming him the whole time. How did they not see the switcheroony? I love saying switcheroony.
Yeah. Yeah, they're not really quick in the village. No.
Even though they're supposed to be, you know, seeing everything.
Yeah.
But they don't.
They don't.
All right. So, let's talk about, so we're kind of hinting towards it. Let's talk about the various therapies. Aversion therapy, we see that with, you know, one of the other characters and Unmutual's being flashed on the screen and number two's face comes up. But then, of course, we get the lobotomy, quote unquote, of our, prisoner. So there's the picture of the procedure.
Yeah.
And I figure you guys gotta have some opinion on lobotomies.
I think it's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it's
absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, it's an outdated practice, you know. Yeah. And I think even at the height when they were giving lobotomies, I think, you know, the science wasn't there to support it, and they were just doing it to make people vegetables and complacent. So I found it interesting that they would go this route. I think, you know, it was well played village, you know, make him think he had a lobotomy, and even coming out of it, he, you know, there's a lot to be said about mind over matter. And if he even believed for a second until he started to realize, wait a second, there's no scar here. There's no nothing here. Also a Band-Aid wouldn't cover a lobotomy scar. Just saying.
Yeah.
Not that I know firsthand, but I'm just, you know.
Yeah, I feel, I mean, it's out of date. It's something. And I mean, again, this was, you know, 40, 45 years ago, whatever. So, but I feel like, you know, there's way better, different ways that could have been more believable for me.
Yeah, I mean, it was used as a scare tactic.
And it didn't work. And the fact that they would go to the extreme to fake that, to think that it would work, was just like, what are they trying to do here? Like, you would know if you, I mean, I feel like you would know if someone tried to give you a lobotomy and you woke up and you felt the same or not, you know, you know what I mean? Like, how do you not know?
I don't know. Let's test it.
And let's do it, Phil.
Yeah, get over here.
Head on the table. I got a pen.
I know. It's going in. I know if it's going to, like, we need a victim.
Yep.
Steven.
Let's get okay. Steven!
No. All right. Steven, he's one of our other producers.
Yeah.
Okay. So then, what I liked about this episode, we got back to the idea of trying to figure out why number six resigned, and mm-hmm. we play the cat and mouse game. It finally got back to that first and foremost. So, I you know, there's a picture of, they all get so angry, right? They all start off so calm, and then it's like, why did you resign?
But we did get a, for me, I thought, a key piece of information that, like, they said it was too early or something. And he was like, I didn't want to at that time.
Mm-hmm.
No one else called that?
What
number six's answer was. He gave some sort of answer. He said, let me find it to see the exact quote, but it was...
But I know what you're saying. It was misinterpreted, though, because he's like, keep going.
He said it wasn't time. It was asking about the resignation, and he said it wasn't time. He said, why did you resign? Why did you do it then? And he said, number six says it wasn't time. So that made me believe that he was forced to resign, which happens a lot when something else bigger happens. And someone says, well, you're going to resign rather than us firing you.
Oh, I took it as it's not my time to talk about it right now.
Yeah, that's what I took it as. No way would he even unconsciously.
But he said it wasn't time. Not, it's not time. His words were, it wasn't time.
Hmm.
Yeah, but he's done that in the past of like, tell me, it wasn't time to get married. You know? And just kind of doing it that way. Like, he'll just go off on a he'll make himself be crazy.
I'm just saying, it stuck out to me because that was the only thing they were talking about, and there was nothing else said. There was no other tangent afterwards.
So, he was forced out is what you're going
to... Well, I feel like he was maybe trying to make him realize, or he was, you know, still in the place of him not knowing, like, should I talk about this, should I not? I don't know. I feel like there was, for me, it was like, perked me up, like, is he going to say something? Or it made me believe that maybe his resignation wasn't all on his own accord.
It perks up number two every time, too. Yeah,
perk him up. Perk you later.
They get so excited.
That'll get the blood flowing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, yo.
But it wasn't time for number two to learn number six the secrets, was it?
No, but that's why we went and we had a public confession. That's what we always need to do.
Yeah, we do.
Which ultimately leads to the last part. Validity of mental illness doesn't matter as long as there supposedly is one.
Right.
Yeah. Again, we'll just label you.
Yeah. Because it's easier.
Yep.
It's doing it that way. It doesn't, but you can have all the verification you want in the world, but who the hell really knows?
Well, right. It's interesting that they use mental illness in this case because it is a stigma. It still is to this day. I mean, we don't.
But there's the fact of, people with higher IQs, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're just so out in their own world that they're insane. Well, okay, but he has an IQ of 200, so you know, are you saying that just because he's too smart that his intelligence doesn't matter because he's like, it goes beyond just you know. Anyway, I'm frustrated because I don't know how to say it, and it is what it is. Thoughts.
About mental illness?
Yeah, and just the way people get labeled and how to diagnose it, perhaps, or how it shouldn't get diagnosed.
I mean, number one, I feel like the first problem is in the term, mental illness. I mean, illness, to me, has a negative connotation. And I think that's how we start going into this conversation, was a negative connotation that there's something wrong, rather than there's something different. So I feel like for me, that's kind of, you know, people think the way they think. There's a brain. There's a lot of stuff. There's a chemical. There's a lot of stuff that's unknown still to this day. So to classify it as something that you would put in, like, when I think of illness, I think of cancer. I think of, you know, things that debilitate people. Like, some mental illnesses, yes, can. I'm not saying they can't, but I feel like there's a lot of ways to, for some people, maybe help or treat or do some education about this. So I don't, from the beginning, I feel like there's a negative stigma. And I feel like it, you know, it starts exactly with the name. Like, there's not, like, people that have, you know, a lot of these people, they can get some chemical or something that can help, you know?
But, you know, so can an illness. I can have a cold, which is an illness, and I can take, well, not a cold, but I can have sinus infection, I think I can take medicine for. I do think classifying it as an illness is it, because you have the mental thing, it makes it almost seem untreatable. But I think that comes more with social stigma versus the mm-hmm. naming.
Yeah. Right. But if something isn't like, so the difference for me is like a cold or something like that is something that comes into your body that mm-hmm. didn't exist and messes with your body and then tries to leave. If this is something that people, it's created in their body, it's the way that their body is made up, then it's, you know, just the same as, you know, someone that maybe doesn't have an arm or a leg that works properly and they get something for, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like there's room for voids to be filled and things to happen.
I think that's why they start to call
it's like you don't catch this.
Yeah.
You know, like I feel like with a cold or other illnesses.
Well, you don't catch cancer and that's born in your body.
True.
I think.
But they don't say, and again, even in that, they don't say cancer illness.
No, so you're maybe right. For me, and I think that's why that. some doctors are using disorder versus illness when they talk
about it. Again, that's saying something is wrong. Like some people that have been classified as crazy or having a quote unquote mental illness are some of the most brilliant people that have created some of the most brilliant things for us in the world. And without them, the world wouldn't be the way it is.
And I think that could be a case where society or government is labeling someone that they don't want. In that, or it could be that there is a correlation to highly creative people suffering from things like anxiety disorder or depression, which is a thing. It's something you have to live with, and you can either choose to medicate yourself or you can work within it. I think the difference is when it comes to some mental things, you know, things like schizophrenia, notwithstanding, you have an option where you can either just take a pill and hope it works, or you can actively work.
I understand all that, but I'm saying, like, even in that, like, people that have anxiety disorder, mm-hmm. like, why does it have to be disorder? Why does it not just they deal with anxiety?
That's
like
fair.
Changing our term, changing the way we think, changing the way we put things out, our energy about it, the way we put it out into the world, I think are the first steps of changing stigma about certain things.
I completely agree.
By the way, in terms of mental suffrage, here's the, like, some of it, what's interesting to me in this day and age, like, a lot of it's self-inflicted, right? You can have anxiety. You can have social media anxiety brought on by you. Like, you don't have to participate in these various things, but you choose to do it. I don't have my weekly bring everyone else down speech.
Oh, I'm shocked.
I kind of had an out-of-the-box theory that was kind of maybe on the lines of Steph Z, but you want me to say it?
No.
Okay.
You can if you want to.
No, I won't.
Okay.
It sounds like you guys now want me to.
No, say it, Phil. We want to hear it.
Okay, so the theory was, like, if you are to believe in God, imagine if God's, out there making, like, these quote-unquote insane people, right? And then we just keep persecuting him and whatever. He's like, well, these people just stop. I'm trying to give them, like, the next Messiah.
Right. Mm-hmm. I totally thought you were going to, like, try and attack me. That's why I was like, no, I don't want you to do it. But, no, that's a great thought. Mm-hmm. It is because we're scared of things we don't know. Mm-hmm. But in essence, things we don't know could bring us something better than what we have. Yeah. But we're scared to experience that.
All right. Last thoughts on a change of mind. And the biggest question, did we change anyone's mind? We brought no information to this whatsoever. If you wanted information, you didn't get it.
So. I think maybe we did.
All right.
I think maybe we changed people's minds to continue watching our show.
Yay!
Or, if you're a first-time viewer, definitely should continue.
There it is.
Anything else?
Just, I don't know.
Okay.
I'm kind of like, it was good. I actually have no extra commentary this week.
Good job.
All right, guys, if there's anything that we missed or you want us to talk about a little bit further that you found interesting, there's obviously interaction. You can write in the comments section. You can tweet these guys. I am Steph Z for Steph Z.
Yeah, with an F. IAMSTEF. Please write me. I'd love to talk more. Keep the conversation going.
That's right. And Meredith Placco?
At M Placco. And yes, I do. I talk on Twitter at least twice a week. I dedicate just to answering people on Twitter. So please chat at me. I like that.
And for more high art discussion, highbrow discussion. Check out their High Profits after show here on AfterBuzz TV.
You can see it right before this one at 11 o'clock on Thursdays. High Profits, it's a show about the legalization of marijuana in the United States. Very interesting. And it's a CNN docuseries, so it's not, you know, what some people might stereotype it to be.
There you go. And so next week we will be doing Do Not Forsake Me, Oh My Darling.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh. Oh, yeah. So get caught up if you need to. As mentioned, don't forget to rate, subscribe, and the biggest, most important thing, just tell a friend, grab a friend, make a friend, and tell them about this, because if you tell them about this, that means you tell them about Prisoner, because why would they watch this without watching The Prisoner, unless they really just love us,
if you do, great. You're kind of cute, Phil, people might watch this for you.
Yeah,
we can have a dating show after this.
Yeah.
That'll lower the bar.
Phil's going to be the next Bachelor.
Yep.
All right, thank you guys, and we'll be seeing you.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz, see you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.
Greatly appreciate